Thanks for staying with us on a special edition of Consider This. Minister Sharad here as we speak to politicians and experts tonight to make sense of the current political crisis in the country. Now, we just spoke to YB Ong Kian Ming. Now, joining us on the line right now, we have a political commentator, Ibrahim Sufian, or better known as Ben, from the opinion research firm Merdeka Center. Ben, good evening. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Look, Ben, I know it's a fast-developing situation right now on the ground, but what is your sense, Ben, of the public sentiment right now? What are you hearing?
Well, I think the public, it sits two ways, with, I think, a very large majority of them expressing unhappiness over how things have transpired. I think if we look at social media, by and large, people are not happy that at the very heightened level of politicking that has taken place over the last couple of days. And people are also, I think, concerned about the impact of this lack of government or rather ruling coalition will have on government services moving forward as well as the economy. I think if you look at the exchange rate, it has gone up. Stock market has gone down. I think there is some concern there. And that if this thing is prolonged, I think it will have a very marked impact on public sentiment for a considerable period of time.
I mean, is this partly this public sentiment driven by a lack of understanding of how governments work? I mean, in many countries, politicians aren't that important. You have good civil service, you have institutions that are resilient, public services carry on despite the lack of a government in power, and sometimes for months on end. Is that possible in Malaysia, that we could still function very well without our politicians?
Well, I think, as a country and as an administration, we have a pretty reasonably well-oiled bureaucracy that can, run by itself without political interference. And we have seen this, happen in many instances. I think, the most recent memory, after the May 9th election, services functioned the way they have as it has been before. So there was no calamity, things got delivered, processed, and so on. So we do have a very strong bureaucracy that can continue to function even if there is no visible political leadership at its helm. I think over time, however, it will impact policies and it will also affect the direction with which some of the recently introduced reforms and programs will be implemented. So there will be some impact, particularly over new things.
Right. Many of us are trying to make sense of the day, Ben. What about, let's start with Tun Dr. Mahathir's moves. Now, what do you make of Tun Dr. Mahathir's choice to resign, to dissolve the government of the day, and then to return as interim prime minister?
Well, I think if you look at hindsight, 2020 hindsight, over what has transpired, perhaps over the last 72 hours, he had on Friday received the clearance from Pakatan Harapan to lead until the end of APEC, and also leave at the moment of his choice. But then beyond that, others from his party had departed in order to form potential coalition with people from UMNO and PAS, as well as the Borneo parties. That is an evolving situation. And I think there's a number of theories, some media reports saying that he's unhappy over this move, and because of that, he has decided to resign. But be that as it may, with him being reappointed Prime Minister, and given the fact that the vast majority of MPs had actually pledged support for him as Prime Minister, he could potentially have a level of free hand to select cabinet members as well as coalition partners to form a government to rule the country.
And how do you think the public is going to react if the new government that he puts together, and if he's the person to put it together, does not reflect the narrative that was spun in the run-up to the last general election and since then of reform, of wanting to rid the country of kleptocracy and so on and so forth? Will that narrative, how will those things kind of gel?
Well, Well, I would think that, you know, formation of a new government, you know, must be predicated on achieving certain goals. Normally, one gets into elections and tries to keep that power so that they can stay in power and dispense economic benefits and so on. In this current scenario, I'm not very sure, partly because the advanced age that the Prime Minister is at, he may have other objectives, such as, you know, ensuring that certain policies get implemented rapidly. So he may be less concerned about representativeness of the coalition. That is just, you know, speculative at this time. But I do think that if, let's say, the reform agenda or some of the legacies that he intends to put in place is to be implemented, then any government that he puts together ought to have the kind of reflection of our society. So it must have Malay representation, it must also have non-Malay representation, as well as those from Sabah and Sarawak. Mm-hmm. So it has to be a relatively balanced coalition, a bit better than how Pakatan Harapan was arranged.
Well, let's come to that question of how Pakatan could have been better. But I do want to ask you this. Azmin Ali, who, of course, is at the centre of the storm, seen as the core conspirator in this move to change government and so on, talks about how he believes in reform, that he wants to continue reform, but he was also the person who would have ushered in many people from the old regime. Do you think, and how does the public make sense of the use of the word reform and a reform agenda by all and sundry, it seems, in this political games?
Yeah, I mean, if the influx of people from the former ruling coalition is a huge flood and that they make up a vast majority of the new government, then certainly it's much harder to get them to stick to a reform agenda. I mean, ideally, any new coalition needs to address the weaknesses that had hampered Pakatan Harapan. Pakatan Harapan's problem was that it lacked Malay representation. Notwithstanding that you had parties like Amanah, Bersatu, and large numbers of Malay Muslim MPs in PKR, in terms of real electorate support, they only captured maybe less than a quarter of the Malay support. And as a result, you know, most of their efforts to and police reforms have been thwarted by the opposition. And, you know, increasingly, as we've seen in recent by-elections, they have performed very poorly. And that is in many ways a pattern of things to come. And so I think the intent was to have a larger component of Malay representation in government. But I think there were others within the group who felt that it ought to be a Bumiputra-only coalition, and as such, we don't need representation from parties like the DAP.
Well, you know, you're on the note of diversity, you mentioned about a balanced coalition. I want to ask you about Sabah and Sarawak and their role, the Borneo territories, their role in becoming kingmakers in this. Where do you see, how do you see this playing out?
Well, I think Sabah and Sarawak, you know, are critical components of any equation in forming government in Malaysia, partly because they possess a very large number of seats, and that, as things currently stand, you know, you have two sort of sides in the peninsula. The PAS UMNO bloc, which has something in the region of nearly 50 to 60 seats, and then you have what used to be the old Pakatan Harapan, with Bersatu wavering in the middle, you know, going over to the other side. They still wouldn't have enough numbers to form government. So any party that wants to form government needs the participation of the Sabahans and the Sarawakians as well. I think here comes the clincher, in the sense that I think many party leaders in Sabah and Sarawak are not so keen to be in the same coalition as PAS, the Islamic Party. However, given the distance and also the concessions that they potentially could negotiate, I think they can withstand such an arrangement at the federal level, so long as they have free hand at their respective states. And that, I think, seems to be at play here.
Yeah, let's talk a bit about the free hand that they want. I mean, there's been a lot of talk. Sarawak has been pushing its own sort of Sarawak agenda of autonomy. How far can they push that before the peninsula-based parties, the parties of Dr. Mahathir, Anwar Ibrahim or Lim Guan Eng, balk at this? I mean, will there be a point at which they will not negotiate or will be a deal-breaker?
I think no. I think so long as they remain part of the system, the parties in Sabah, Sarawak will most of the time go along with whichever is the dominant party in Peninsula Malaysia, so that they can continue to be part of the federal government and therefore have access to federal resources and also better negotiate for their state. You know, because by cutting deals and being in partnership with the federal ruling party, they also get to constrain or contain any kind of other parties that are trying to set foot or expand in their respective states. So it's a two-way game. Number one, they have a cooperative game with at the federal level, but at the same time, there is competition at the state level because the states of Sabah and Sarawak possess a level of autonomy that the states in the peninsula does not.
Ben, how likely do you think it's going to go back to the polls that snap elections are going to be called, and do you think this would be the right route to take?
Well, I think it might take a bit of time before an option like snap elections be considered. I think the Prime Minister will be given enough time to try and form a stable government. And I think if that effort works out, then the country could avoid snap polls. But if, however, you know, he is unable to form a stable coalition and one that can operate properly, then, you know, can't rule out in the future that he may need to dissolve parliament and call fresh elections. So it's certainly there, up in the air, but not immediately a concern.
I mean, Ben, for many viewers who are trying to figure out what would be the more democratic route, do you think going back to the polls as opposed to kind of cobbling something that is in the interest or in a part of Dr. Mahathir's vision, which would be better? Which would be more democratic to do?
Well, I mean, if you want it to be democratic, then, you know, you should organize fresh polls and then people can elect their MPs all over again and new governments can be formed. But I think we also have to remember that the electoral system is what's in the process of being reformed. And the electoral system in itself, you know, is fraught with all kinds of problems like gerrymandering, malapportionment, and also representation issues. So it's still a work in progress. So for us to go back to the 2018 electoral rule set, we will, you know, potentially open up, go back to the old problems. So I think that's what I think some of the players are trying to avoid, going back there, and therefore just trying to put together a government out of the elected MPs. And I think the other argument against having immediate elections right now is that, as things currently stand, majority of the MPs, you know, purportedly have professed support for Dr. Mahathir. So I think given time, he would be able to choose his government and his cabinet members to form the administration. Right. So we just need a bit of time.
All right, thank you so much, Ben, for joining us tonight and helping us make sense of everything that's going on. We're going to take a quick break now. But after this, we will be back with YB Fahmi Fazil, MP of Lembah Pantai. Stay tuned to consider this.